Welcome to this Member Drive Friday edition of a Juno Afternoon. It's October 14th, 2022. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gwyneth Sheesh, for sharing a bit of your day with us. On today's show, we'll get to know Chloe Plesnack, KTO's new morning edition host, talking about moving from Homer, her start in public media, and managing a difficult sleep schedule. Juno Arts and Humanities Council have a traveling art exhibit coming in 2023. Megan Chambers will fill us in on all the details. And our monthly update with the Juno Public Library. We'll hear about upcoming events and get a book recommendation for some fall reading. Those conversations, sounds wild, music and more, coming up right here on a Juno Afternoon. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akwan. The Glenadie have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot, once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages, and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life. For today, and for future generations. Taking a quick look at the weather, there is a special weather advisory for this weekend. More heavy rain this weekend for Southeast Alaska, especially if you're going up the north coast, Haines and Skagway, expecting possibly up to 4 inches of rain. Here in Juneau, tonight after 8 p.m., it's going to start raining. Could be pretty heavy at times. We might get up to an inch, and then tomorrow morning into the afternoon, another inch possible, likely. Again, the rain could be heavy at times. It'll start to lighten out on Saturday night, and Sunday about another 40% chance of rain, so it's going to be another one of those wet and wild weekends. Sunrise today was at 7:31, sunset tonight 5:54. We had 10 hours and 23 minutes of daylight today. And over the course of the weekend through Monday, we are gonna lose 15 minutes of daylight. So it's getting darker, it's getting colder, it's getting wetter. Take care of yourself out there.
My name is Charlotte Truitt, and I'm the Executive Director of the Juno Symphony. I believe KTOO is important to our community because it's a true source of bringing people together who are here in our community, and we get to know one another through the local involvement and the distribution of information about what's happening in people's lives. In my role at the Juno Symphony, we really rely on the local presence in the media to spread the word about the events that we have going on. It's very important getting exposure of our activities that are all designed to bring the community together. I think the membership support is just critical to allowing us to all function and be brought together in various partnerships. You know, we all want to be a part of things that are good and contributing to a positive way to the community. And even the small gifts, large gifts, we can all be a part of something bigger. And when we all do our part, some great things happen. I hope that you'll join me in giving at ktoo.org today.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno and KAUK 91.7 Juno Auk Bay and online at ktoo.org. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Often, Juno is thought of as a small town, but in Alaska, Juno is, by population anyway, the third largest city. For some, that can be a big change when moving from a smaller community in Alaska. Our next guest has done exactly that. Chloe Plesnack is not only new to Juno, she is new to KTOO, having started a little more than a month ago as KTOO's new morning host. I had a chance to sit down with Chloe earlier this week to talk moving, morning edition, and sleep deprivation. Hi, Chloe. Gwyneth Cheesh for joining me today.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's great to talk with you. So first off, welcome to KTOO and to Juno. It's been a little more than a month for you now. How are you settling in?
Settling in really good, starting to get more and more comfortable with driving on more than a two-lane highway. It's really great here. It's almost magical, the way the hills just kind of rise up around you. And yeah, it's beautiful in a way that back home wasn't. And I think that's really special.
Right. And back home is, you're from Homer.
I'm from Homer. Yeah. Homer, Alaska.
Right. And has this been a big move for you?
It has been. Yeah. I've never lived anywhere except for Homer. I was born there at the hospital, raised there. So it's been big. I got on the ferry and it was kind of my first solo adventure, but I think it was time, it was necessary, and it was definitely worth it. I'm loving it here.
So Homer is a town of about 5,000, a little over 5,000, right?
Yeah.
So have you noticed the difference in having about 30 some odd thousand?
Yeah.
what kind of differences do you see?
Mostly driving. I learned how to use a roundabout for the first time on my first day right off the ferry, and it's been different.
When you'll experience this when you go to the grocery store. You will still run into everybody that you know in Juno. That's how it happens.
It has happened. I've ran into my friend, actually, I went to high school with that lives here at the grocery store every time I've gone there. And it's almost comical. We're like, really? Like,
from the same small town and now we're running.
Yep. It's like,
That's awesome. All right. So what was it like growing up in a town of 5,000 in Homer?
It was great. You know, it has its pros and its cons. It's really comforting and you have a lot of support and there's a lot of people there that want to see you do well. But it also can be pretty stifling. And, you know, after a while when you're a young adult looking to branch out, it seems like a lot of opportunities is already taken. And so I was kind of looking for a change that would, you know, open more doors, open more opportunities to me, and I just wasn't finding that in Homer anymore.
Right. I guess if you try to specialize in something, there might be somebody who already is doing that thing. And
yeah.
And usually I feel like in small towns, they never let go of that thing.
Very much so. Yep. So I love it. I would love to go back someday, but Juno seems to be much more full of opportunity for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So how early was public radio a part of your life?
Oh, from the beginning, as long as I can remember. I mean, every weekend, driving around with my dad, listening to Weekend Edition and Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me and Car Talk. And, you know, those are some of my earliest memories, really. So it's been there since the beginning. And, yeah, it's really special, the fact that I'm here in this position, being able to host Morning Edition for people is just beyond belief. It's such a privilege.
Yeah. Especially if you've grown up with it that way. It was the same way for me. My grandparents were, you know, every night was the McNeil Lehrer Hour, and, you know, and my grandparents would listen to it on the radio, and in the car, and Car Talk in the garage while my grandpa was working on stuff. And yeah, exactly. So what kind of impact does the station in Homer, which is KBBI, right? Mm-hmm. What kind of impact does that have on the community being such a small town?
Yeah, it's really, how do I explain it? I want to say interdisciplinary, but that's not the right word. Mm-hmm. It's very much collaborative with other organizations in the community. And I think that's what I loved most about it was, you know, raising community voices, really. And I think that was really important and powerful about my time there was the opportunity to, you know, interview executive directors or general managers and kind of spread awareness of issues and just be really collaborative with other organizers in the community. And, you know, it is a really small community, so most people listen to KBBI there and are, you know, involved in it in some way. So that was really important too.
Yeah. So I feel like maybe the word is integrated, right?
Integrated.
It seems like it's very integrated into the community. And KTO is very much like that as well. Juno's not that big, right?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of cross partnerships that happen. And it feels like from a small town to Juno, which I think of as a small town, having lived in New York and Los Angeles and stuff, and I'm originally from Anchorage. So Juneau feels that way to me, but it also feels like, yeah, you run into people at the grocery store, but all the partnerships, you know all the EDs, they're not, it's not like in a big town where you don't run into people often enough,
right.
You know? Yeah, so that's kind of great. That was a great way to grow up, I assume.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Yeah, so it's nice to grow up in a small town, but then move to a bigger town.
Gives you some perspective.
So, all right, you started volunteering at around age 16, is that right?
I did, yep. I was working as a peer educator at Ketchumak Bay Family Planning Clinic in Homer, and they ran a co-op kind of center for teens where they could hang out, and I was there one afternoon, and my program manager came to me and said, you know, KBBI is looking for volunteers. Is that something you'd be interested in doing? And it was just kind of this, like, you know, random. She'd probably said things like that 100 times to me about different programs in town. But I loved KBBI because I had grown up listening to it, and kind of jumped on that one and was like, that would be awesome. I could host a music show. And, you know, every 16-year-old thinks they have the best music taste in the world. So
Of course,
I wanted to broadcast that to all of the population.
I'll show you what good music is.
So I went through the training. I completed it with my friend, and we started doing music shows, and I just kept doing that for a couple years there, and eventually was offered the position as the Morning Edition host.
Oh, that's pretty great.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned you had a friend that you did the training with, and I know that you also had some tragedy around this time in your life, right?
Yeah, I did.
What happened?
Well, when I was, right after I'd graduated from high school, my friend Parker Gibson passed away in a plane accident, and he was... He loved music. He was a musician. He was an artist. You know, he really did have the best music taste in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he passed away, we decided as a group, that friend group, that we wanted to put on some kind of music show for him, just to kind of facilitate community grieving and kind of start a conversation about that. And since I was the one that was most actively involved in KBBI, you know, I reached out to my point of contact. She said, this is a great idea, you know, because it being a community radio station and it being such a major thing for such a small community, it seemed like the right thing to do. And so we did that.
And it was Parker a host of a show as well, or did you guys do it together?
We did it together sometimes, yeah.
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 So he was very into music. And
he was.
So it seemed like the great honor to him was to do a music show.
Yeah, and we kind of just showcased some of his favorite artists, his favorite songs that reminded us of him.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, you know, each of our friends kind of went around the circle that were comfortable sharing things and shared little tidbits about him. And I ran the engineering board and did all of that side of it. So.
Now, am I accurate in saying that you did this 5 days after he passed?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, we did it pretty fast.
How did you find the strength? Where did the strength for that come from? Was it really, was it in the honoring him?
I think it was, yeah. It's hard, you know, because it was a couple years ago, and it's obviously a traumatic experience, so
yeah.
You build up certain blocks in your brain to that, but it really felt like the thing to do for him, just because of how much he loved music and how much the community was kind of reeling from it. But I definitely had to step up and kind of put my emotions second and kind of use it as a way to, you know, make my friends feel better, make myself feel better. And, you know, it was a beautiful thing. We're all in the studio dancing and laughing and crying. And, you know, it's just one example of why I love public radio and why I love that community intersection, is because it allows people from all over to kind of be together in those moments. And, you know, newscasting throughout the COVID pandemic too, it can feel really lonely in there, but it is... Everybody's there listening. So
right.
Yeah.
Well, that was an amazing thing to do to honor him. And it's really, really sad when someone is taken so early in their life when they had such potential. And you are a great friend for doing that.
Thank you.
Okay. So, fighting my tears. So let's see if we can. I feel for you, and I understand how difficult that could be. So,
yeah.
And especially if it's fresh, like if it's only a few years old. So. So let's get back to hosting Morning Edition, because you said that's where you ended up getting a position to host at KBBI. How did that come about?
Well, I was working at a local art center as a communications and marketing person, and it was great, but it wasn't exactly what I wanted to do forever, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do forever, but I was still volunteering actively at KBBI, and when the former Morning Edition host was like, hey, I really need some sleep and some rest and a break from this, I started filling in kind of part-time just to give him some days off, and then he was like, this is great, I want to sleep in forever. And they offered that position to myself.
Were you still, was this all at volunteer at that point when you were filling in for him?
I think I was getting paid for fill-in. But up to that, it was all volunteer. Yeah, all the music and stuff.
And at what age did you start hosting Morning Edition?
I was 19. Well, 18. And 18. Then I turned 19 right after.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is an early age to be a Morning Edition host.
Yeah.
Yeah, to sort of switch your schedule, because aren't most 18-year-olds wanting to sleep 12 hours a day?
Well, you know, I was in school. I just started undergraduate, but I am a night owl, so, you know, that was tough. That was originally why I had to give up the position, was because I was writing two senior thesis papers while hosting Morning Edition.
Oh, my goodness.
All in one semester, taking 22 credits. So I'm definitely, there's a side of me that's a little bit of an overachiever, but I'm learning to kind of tamper down. But I love it. It's great.
So can you describe a typical day in the life of a Morning Edition host?
For sure, yeah. So I get to the studio around 4:30 in the morning, and then I start pulling news from statewide, all different radio stations, just trying to find what I really think listeners want to hear and need to hear this morning. And, you know, after that I get in the studio, I start pre-recording stuff. So when you hear me on there, it's not always me live. Sometimes it's some pre-recorded things, too. I'm nifty like that. And I'm in the hosting chair until about 8:20 in the morning.
8:20, okay.
And then I supplement that with whatever needs getting done around the station.
So what time do you try to get up?
I try to get up by about 3:45 to get ready.
3:45. Yep, and so how many times do you hit that snooze button?
Quite a few. Yeah. You know, it's every night when I go to bed, I'm like, I'm going to be better about it. And every morning when I wake up, it's snooze. But I get here on time.
Right. And that's a good thing. The news happens.
Late.
It's happening and you're doing it.
Yep.
So you work until around noon or one or so in the afternoon. And then how do you manage the sleep schedule? In terms of, like, do you have to go to bed? Like, I think our previous Morning Edition host, Matt Miller, always said he was in bed by, like, 8:30 or something like that.
Yeah, I would say 8:30 or 8 is what I try and aim for. I'm not always the best about it, and I'm definitely still adjusting. But that would be ideal. I mean, you'd get at least 8 hours that way, I believe, which is the hope.
Now, for a person on the younger side of their years, how does that impact your social life?
I'm a little bit of a nerd, Boston. I read a lot. I'm totally addicted to school. I had to take some time back from school this semester just to kind of focus on moving and all that stuff. But normally I'm enrolled in at least two courses a semester. So my social life was already kind of struggling.
Gotcha. So you're in the phase of growth as a person right now.
I suppose, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think some folks, I know I'm interested in this. What's the difference between a host and a reporter?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say a host is all about being and sounding super accessible to people listening. Mm-hmm. It's about being vulnerable yet honest at the same time. It's a hard balance because you're coming at people when they're really vulnerable. You know, it's the early morning. They've just woke up and hit the snooze button four times. Mm-hmm. And suddenly there's this girl in their ear talking. So it's really hard, but reporting is super hard too. I don't think I could be a reporter. Reporting is all about, in my opinion, research and, you know, finding a story and finding a way to tell it in a really intriguing way. Mm-hmm. And I prefer to be reading all of the excellent writing done by the reporters in here.
Gotcha. Okay, so what makes a good host?
Yeah, like I said, I think just being really vulnerable and honest and having an approachable tone, mm-hmm. not being too abrasive with tone. That's, you know, hard because you want to sound like a newscaster, but you also want to sound like a friend. And balancing that, I think somebody that values community, somebody that recognizes what a privilege it is to be on someone's radio that early in the morning and telling these stories to them.
Is there anything that makes hosting difficult for you?
Yeah, lots of things. I think it's really hard when you're sitting there, and I experienced this at my first job at KBBI when I was reporting or hosting during the COVID pandemic, was just the influx of news and horrible things you hear. Mm. And you sit there with those headphones on for like 4 hours every morning, and it's the worst news. And it's hard to find the good news in that when it's so much terrible things happening. But I think that's also, you know, what makes it important that you're there, because then you get to come in and you get to be that soft, open, approachable voice for people with that empathy guiding you.
When it's a horrible news day, is it something where you're looking for a lighter story to like put inside the difficult
oh,
news?
Yeah, always. Yeah, it can be hard. But I think just, you know, realizing that no matter what, you know, it's going to be okay.
And that's what you're sort of there for, right?
Yeah.
You're there. You're sort of the voice of like, you know, here's the news, but we're going to get through this together.
Right. But it's 47 degrees in Juneau and, and raining. It's going to be okay. Life goes on.
And what is the reward for hosting?
Oh, so much. I think, you know, I have people that still reach out to me from my community in Homer that say, you know, that they miss my voice and they miss having me there. And, you know, just the realization that you're touching people's lives, even if you don't realize it, that even though you're sitting there talking to yourself in a room, you know, other people are there with you and they're hearing and they're going through those stories and feeling those emotions with you. So it's a practice in being alone, but realizing you're not alone.
Yeah, you're not just talking into the void.
No.
And also your friends back home can just tune into KTO.org every
morning. I know, I've been plugging it.
If they want to listen to you.
I shoot them the link.
So I know that in addition to moving here to host Morning Edition, you're also getting a master's degree in, is it public administration?
Public administration, yep, through UAS.
And what do you hope that that might lead to down the line for you?
I would love to be involved in any kind of nonprofit or even higher education administration. I'm really passionate about obviously working for nonprofits and public radio stations and things like that. But I had a couple interactions when I was a young person trying to find work in those organizations that made me realize that people that are leading nonprofits aren't always the ones that should be.
Gotcha.
And so I wanted to be someone that should be leading an organization like that. So seeking out that higher education to kind of supplement my experience and maybe someday put me in a position to be a powerful leader in that kind of sector.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So, and this is the last question, but I just wanted to find out, do you have any, because sometimes we're listening to our news reporter or our hosts and we don't necessarily get to know them really well, but I'm just curious if you have any, like, you've mentioned reading and a few other things, but what are some of your favorite hobbies or your guilty pleasures, like favorite TV show, that kind of thing?
Ooh, Northern Exposure is my guilty TV show, which is funny. I don't know if you've watched it, Boston.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Chris in the Morning is definitely one of my favorite characters in any kind of media. And it's ironic that I am Art. Chloe in the Morning. And every day I fight the urge to say it.
Right.
But
Rebrand.
Yeah. No, I love reading. I love collecting books, specifically rare books, like children's books and things like that.
Okay.
I'm a big fan of that. I've had to delete the eBay app from my phone several times. I have a dog. I love dogs. I'm a total dog person.
Right.
I have a cat, too, though.
Nice.
Who's pretty...
Balance in your life.
Balance
in
everything.
Right, right.
I love spending time walking around Juneau, finding all the cool new places to habitate.
Awesome. Well, welcome to town. Gwyneth Cheese to our guest, Chloe Plesnack. You can catch Chloe every morning, Chloe in the Morning, hosting Morning Edition right here on KTOO 104.3 and 91.7. And you can follow Chloe on her new Twitter account, @Plesnack. That's PLEZNAC. Thank you for joining me, Chloe.
Thank you for having me.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Hi, I'm Flordolino Logandino. I'm the Artistic Director of Theater Alaska. KTOO offers the community the opportunity to connect with itself. Through Juno Afternoon, I always get to know what's happening in the other art spaces in the city, but also it connects us to the world. It goes in depth about the different issues of the time. That's what I really love, like listening to the programs that talk about what's happening right now in Ukraine, what's happening in Russia, what's happening in Africa. So I get always these really great stories about the world and how it can relate to what's happening in my life. I'm very grateful that KTOO is here for myself, my family, and for everyone, and that's why we're members here at KTOO. If you're not a member yet, give at ktoo.org.
Thanks to Flordolino for that membership spot. It is our membership drive. You can join as a member at ktoo.org. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Art should be accessible to all. Art is also at the heart of community. And the Juno Arts and Humanities Council is planning a big project for 2023 to help facilitate both accessibility and community. The Portable Southeast Art Project will celebrate coastal life and Southeast artists. Megan Chambers, the Portable Southeast Project Manager, is here to share about this exciting new program. Thank you for joining me, Megan, on the Zoom.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm super stoked to chat about Portable Southeast today.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Megan, I know you do a lot of things. Before we dive into Portable Southeast, what else is going on for you?
I wear a couple hats currently. I was a longtime staff at the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, which is where this project originally started, and I'm no longer staff with them. I left to pursue my own projects right before the pandemic. I am an artist and a business owner. I have a small business that I operate from my home here in Juno. But of course, I couldn't keep my hands off the community art building ideas floating around in my head. And so Portable Southeast has connected me back into the Arts Council, and I'm contract managing this project for them.
That's pretty awesome. Okay. So do you want to plug your small business? What is it that you do on the side?
Oh.
You didn't give
Thank
a website
you.
Or nothing.
I know. So I'm a printer. I'm a letterpress printer. My business is called Saltwater Press, and I mix old printing methods with new content, modern art. So I print greeting cards and stationery and small art prints on vintage machinery from the early 1900s.
Oh, that's awesome. And how do we find that? Do you have a website?
Yes, it's www.saltwater.press.
Saltwater.press. That's a nice website. Okay, cool. Okay, so what is Portable Southeast?
Portable Southeast is a traveling art exhibit that will begin showing in early 2023 in January and move from community to community, one per month from January through June. And it'll start in Southeast Alaska. And through planes or barges or ferries, whatever we can make happen, depending on the weather and the month and time of year, which I think is pretty unusual. You know, there's like exhibits frequently travel through the rest of the United States. You'll see it in news, you know, the Van Gogh Museum or exhibit was just in Anchorage. And, but that doesn't really happen in Southeast Alaska because logistics are difficult. However, the unique nature of all of these islands and the archipelago of Southeast, I feel like, is really, really good content and community building opportunities for artists and venues. And we've never truly tapped into that, at least in my lifetime here in Southeast Alaska. And so I was excited about this opportunity to produce an art show that would celebrate coastal art, but also get shown in both large and small communities across Southeast.
Has anything like this ever been attempted before?
I got this. This is a brainchild of mine from probably approaching 10 years ago. I was on my honeymoon in Scotland, and we stopped in this teeny tiny art gallery on the western coast of Scotland, like in a town probably the size of Haines, but it had a really thriving art community. You could tell there were galleries and exhibits and shops all over. And one of the exhibits that I saw was this traveling art show. And I asked the person working the front desk about it. And she said, yeah, it's really cool. It every year it happens and it goes in between Scotland, Spain, and Portugal, these coastal towns. And I was like, oh my goodness, this has got to happen in Southeast Alaska. And so I took the idea back, but this was probably 2016, 2017. And it was like in the throes of 1,000 events going on in Juneau and any weekend, you know, pre-pandemic. Right. So every org was kind of at capacity at the time, and we didn't really have staff resources to do it. But recently, my former coworkers and my good friends who still work at the Jack applied for a grant through the Alaska State Council on the Arts, a new grant called a community partnership grant with Portable Southeast as the proposal. And they received it. And now here we are, almost 10 years later, making it happen. So it's super exciting.
That must be really satisfying to have an idea, like a little germ of a seed of an idea like 10 years ago, and to see it finally coming to fruition.
Yeah, it is. And they were very generous and kind and asked me if I was interested in coming back on a contract basis to help manage it. And I jumped at the opportunity and was, you know, a great excuse to work with the Arts Council and then to work with artists across Southeast Alaska and venues too. And so the goal is that this show doesn't just hit like Sitka, Juneau, Ketchikan and go to the main galleries, but it'll go to Craig, it will go to Haines, it'll go, you know, there's six communities in total, just because we only have a finite amount of time, 6 months, and then at least a week of travel in between, probably. So it can't go to all of Southeast Alaska. But it'll go to six spots, and it'll get, you know, we have funds to like rent out a school gym if we need to. If there are no current exhibit opportunities, then we can make that happen. And so it'll be really cool to bring artwork from across Southeast Alaska to unusual or like non-high traffic venues, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. And the grant allows you to have a space, whether there's a space like a normal or what would be an art gallery that may have already been booked or something like that, you can still find a space and make this event happen. That's pretty
exactly.
Great. Yeah.
It'll be a mix. Like the show will end here in Juneau, and that will be the final exhibit, just because logistically, then we collect all the art at the again at the end.
Right. Get it all back to the artists. Okay. So now I have a couple questions, because I know I'm looking at a sort of important dates calendar, and I noticed that the selected artists haven't been notified yet. Is that correct?
They have not yet. No.
It looks like you, on this sheet I have, it says October 26th. So if you're out there and you're listening and you applied for this, you'll find out, in a little bit.
Yeah, in a couple weeks. Yes, yeah, so we're moving into the stage of the project where we've received all the submissions. We got over 40 submissions from across Southeast Alaska, which is great for a first-time show. And now we have our curator panel. So it's not like it would be totally unfair for the Jack and just Juneau people to select what art goes into the show. And that's not really in the spirit of the show. And so we've solicited people from each region. We kind of broke it up into Southern, Middle, and Northern Southeast Alaska. And so we have two representatives from each region to curate the show, and they'll review all of the submissions. They are not artists that have applied, obviously, and like none of the Jack staff is our reviewers either. So it's a it's an unbiased panel from outside the project, and they will admit 20 to 25 pieces into the show, depending on the strength of the piece, what size it is, you know, how easily can we this selected work in totes and crates and
I have questions about that. I'm curious about that. So the artists are you done with the paneling? Have you selected all the artists? Do you know?
The curator panel is 90% complete. We're waiting on a response from one more person.
Nice.
And they are all they're all either artists or arts organization employees, so people working in the arts sector.
Gotcha.
But 95% artists. So artists reviewing other artists is my, like, that's my preferred method.
Yeah, I like that too. I think that seems appropriate, especially for this kind of thing. So when does the tour start?
It'll start in January, you know, just like the month of the year that has the best weather.
Yeah, right?
It's the way to get high value, fragile items from one community to another. No, it'll start in January and it'll go through June. And some of that is the grant timeline. The money needs to be spent by June. And so it would have been nice for it to start touring later. But, and you know, the way the when we found out we got the grant funds and then it was kind of like full steam ahead to get the show going. So,
yeah, the timing and all that. So let me ask this question. Is the panel taking into consideration the artwork that was submitted based upon the idea that it has to ship around Southeast?
Yes, however, I mean, no, not really. All art submitted was under a requirement that it had to fit in some size of priority mail postal box. So up to, if you were painting, for example, up to like 11 by 14 is the biggest thing you can get in a regional rate flat rate box. So that was a stipulation of the art submitted. It had to be small enough that it was easily transportable to Juneau. And so that way we can get quite a number of smaller pieces across Southeast without paying $1 million in creating and shipping fees.
Yeah. Yeah. Did anybody try to break the rules?
I don't have access to the submissions because I don't really see it. I can see the number of pieces and where they're from, but I haven't looked at the art itself. I'm just managing the program, and so I try to stay when it's I wouldn't call it a juried show. We're calling it a curated show, but if there is some kind of jurying going on, the only people that need to see all of the information are the jurors, really.
Right. Right.
So, but so far the Jack staff who managed the application platform don't seem worried. So,
have all of the communities that you're going to, have they been selected? Because I know you were looking for exhibitors at some point.
Yeah, we've got 5 out of 6 confirmed. So I'm excited about that. And that'll be our task for the rest of November. October, November is to get the communities confirmed. But I can tell you it'll show in Juneau, obviously. Mm-hmm. We are working on a community in Prince of Wales. So that's our last one, which of course is the trickiest one. There's fewer exhibit opportunities down there, but it'll show in Ketchikan, in Haines, in Sitka, and there's one more that I'm forgetting off the top of my head.
Awesome.
But it's a good mix of population, so I'm really excited about that.
Great. Well, how do we follow this tour? Is there a website? Is there a page? Is there a Facebook group? How do we get hooked into this?
Yeah, I guess that's a great question. What do people want to see? Where do you want to see it? It's definitely going to be on the JAHC website. So JAHC jackmaine.org/portable-southeast. And then there's also links right on the Jackmaine page there. So pretty easy to navigate. You don't need to remember that link, but, and then we'll be posting it on Jack's social media, but now I'm thinking maybe I need to get its own social media thing going.
I mean, it's really interesting. Like during the pandemic, I know there were a lot of things that started up that were either Facebook groups or something, and some of them have continued, you know, because this is a really cool idea. It's a really cool project, and it gets art out. It gets artists out to communities that maybe they haven't been able to get to before. And so it's something that hopefully will become like, you know, maybe that hopefully this is the first annual Portable Southeast.
Yeah, that's my hope. My other big drive for this project is there's not a lot of like medium level exhibit opportunities. So, you know, maybe you've kind of reached your capacity as an artist in your own local sphere. And then after that, it's submissions to like the State Museum or something that is, it can be pretty overwhelming to apply for as an artist. And so my hope is that Portable Southeast provides a bridge in between those two opportunities. And you go through, you know, you've got to go through the submission process. You may or may not be selected. You can apply next year.
Yeah.
You've got to follow deadlines, get work to places on time, that kind of thing. So I think that's really important on this project too, is that it's a really wonderful opportunity for the communities, but it's also a really important opportunity for the artists themselves who we can feel isolated. And, you know, you're right, the pandemic made that even more so for us Alaskans, but traveling exhibits and online presence has really helped that.
That's awesome. Well, thanks to our guest, Megan Chambers, with the Portable Southeast Art Project, coming to a community near you in Southeast Alaska in 2023. For more information, you can visit jahc.org. Thank you for joining me, Megan.
Thanks for having me, and please donate to the fall membership if you haven't already.
Nice. Thanks for the pitch. We appreciate that. Bye-bye.
No, bro.
Up next, we'll get our monthly update from John Thill from the Juneau Public Library. But right now, Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild.
Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
A thunderstorm rolls through interior Alaska and lightning flashes. Each year, lightning starts about 100 fires in Alaska and burns thousands of acres. The boreal forest has evolved to burn regularly, and the boreal forest plants and animals have adapted to the effects of these frequent fires. Shows like Bambi and Smokey Bear portray fire as a kind of villain or a monster, but fire is a natural part of Alaska's ecosystem. Unlike the cartoon fires, wildland fires are not particularly fast-moving, and most animals escape fire. Bears and moose can easily outrun most fires, and birds can fly away. Smaller mammals can move to wet areas or hide underground. Smokey Bear's message to prevent forest fires is aimed at accidental, human-caused fires, like those near populated areas which can threaten life and property. Natural fire in the boreal forest is necessary for habitat and wildlife diversity. Prescribed fires are sometimes set by fire professionals under specific conditions to enhance wildlife habitat. Some prescribed fires are used to reduce forest fuels to help prevent potentially dangerous fires in the future. Like wildfires, prescribed fires stimulate regeneration. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
Hi, this is Shelley Delaney, KTOO Arts and Culture reporter. I have had so much fun this season producing the Garden Talk podcast. Each week, I get to learn something new, and I get to share gardening and harvesting tips from local growers with all of you. When you sign on as a member, you make it possible to hear the voices of our community. Give today at ktoo.org. And thanks.
Thanks, Shelley, one of our awesome hosts here on Juneau Afternoon and different monthly segments. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. With these rainy, blustery days, gardening season has been wrapping up here in Juneau, and perhaps it's time to reflect and then cozy up with a good book. Well, our next guest, John Thill, library director from Juneau Public Library, can help us out with both of those things. Gunnith Chiefs, John, for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so fall is here. Gardening is wrapping up. People are most likely planting their bulbs, or they already have, for spring. And you are partnering on an upcoming event, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We have the Southeast Alaska Master Gardener Association coming to the library to talk about, you know, what they had success with and what they maybe had less success with this year as far as gardening goes. And the title of the program is Grew This, Killed That, Lesson Learned. And it's going to be happening Tuesday, October 25th at the library, at the Mendenhall Library.
I love the creative title. Was that somebody from the Master Gardeners?
Master Gardeners came up with that one. It's a good title.
And can you tell us the title one more time just so I can laugh once again?
Grew This, Killed That, Lesson Learned.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. I am not a green thumb. I have some plants in my office and I'm trying to, like, you know, keep them watered. And, you know, there's, you know, Morgan down at the plant store has been very helpful and patient with me as I as I learn how to sort of figure out and navigate having plants in my life. And actually, we did, for the first time, my partner and I, we planted bulbs last year. And it was great to see them come in the spring, but they disappeared so quickly, and, you know, it was kind of sad, and it's kind of interesting. So I maybe need to go to this.
I mean, that's the beautiful thing about the Master Gardeners is that, you know, they're great for advice, you know? They're great people to pick the brains of.
They just want to help, right? Yeah. Because it is so difficult to grow things in Juneau, you know? It feels like a place where, you know, it's always winter. Mm-hmm. And like right now, this weekend, with all this rain coming, there is no way that you want to get out there and garden, right?
I mean, to each their own, I guess, right?
I guess you put on the gear and you get out there and you just get, we just to get wet.
I'm sure there's one of these master gardeners who's, you know, out there in that weather.
And so is this, you're partnering with the Master Gardeners on this project. Have you partnered with them before?
We have, but it's been a few years. So this is the first thing we've done with them since the pandemic. So it's a great, you know, kind of reawakening of that partnership.
Yeah. And is that happening more for the library now that we're sort of, even
Absolutely.
Though the COVID thing is still around, we're all a little bit tired of it. We're kind of back to getting out and doing things.
Yeah, we're doing a lot more as far as programming goes at the library. I mean, this week we launched Douglas Storytime again. So
nice.
Doing that on Thursdays. So it's, you know, we're trying to, you know, get a lot of new offerings out for the public to come down and check out.
For those that don't know what Douglas Storytime is, can you fill us in?
Well, it's for kids. You know, it's typically aimed at, you know, about a 2 to 4 year old audience. And it's a great way to introduce your kids to learning before they enter school, get them prepared for school. Get them up to date with some of those good skills they're going to need to be successful in kindergarten.
And does that that happens at the Douglas Library?
Yep, Douglas Library every Thursday at 3 p.m.
Every Thursday at 3 p.m., Douglas Library. That's great. Other events that might be coming up?
Well, we got something kind of big that we're doing with the Filipino Community Incorporated.
Mm-hmm.
So our friends organization, which is our nonprofit arm, has helped sponsor this event called Food and Film at the Filipino Community Hall. So it's a great event that's coming up. We have a bunch of local chefs who are going to be cooking some great food, having a panel discussion, and then we're going to be screening a film called Ulam Main Dish, which is all about Filipino food and its place on the American table. So it's going to be quite a wonderful event that's going to go on the afternoon of October 22nd, which is a Saturday. So it starts about 1:30, goes till about 6. We have like a bunch of different things going on, and it's going to be awesome.
And where is that happening?
It's going to be happening at the Filipino Community Hall, which is on Franklin Street in downtown Juneau.
Awesome. And is that a partnership between, it's a bunch of folks involved in that, right?
So the Filipino Community Incorporated, the Friends of the Juneau Public Library, and then Juneau Public Library is going to be there. We're going to be offering people the opportunity to get library cards, check out some good cookbooks. And so we're excited to be part of it.
Wow. It's really nice to see all the events coming back. Do people have to register for any of these events?
So for Ulam, there's no registration required, but there is a ticket fee for that one. So it's $35. It pays for, you know, that wonderful food that they're going to be offering at that event. So
okay.
Great opportunity to support some of those local chefs and also the Filipino Community Incorporated, which is a great nonprofit.
Yeah, History Month. There's a lot of things happening out there. People need to investigate that. I know on next Friday's Juno Afternoon, we're going to have a whole bunch of things dedicated to that and some interviews based on that. So that'll be really nice. And for the Master Gardeners event, no fee for that?
No fee, free. Anything at the libraries is free.
Anything at the libraries is free. Okay, so I'm curious, how do events get planned at the library?
Well, it really depends. You know, often we have a community partner approach us, say, hey, wouldn't it be neat if we did something like this? Sometimes we reach out to people, like, you know, with the Filipino community, we kind of reached out and said, hey, let's maybe think of an event that might be nice for people to attend. And, you know, we see if it meets some of our strategic goals, and then we kind of go about it and make it happen.
Got it. Okay. So if somebody was interested in partnering with you, they come and who do they speak to? They speak to you?
Right now, me. We have our we usually have a programs person, but they're out on leave right now, but they'll be back in about around the start of the new year. And so I'm the person to talk to at the moment.
How do we do that? I just wanted to make sure we get that out.
You can give me an email. It's john.thill@juno.org. And that's probably the best way to reach me.
That's probably the best way to reach out, say you have something in mind. And how far out are plans made?
Well, we try to plan about a quarter ahead, you know. So right now we're looking at a winter quarter. So, you know, things in December, January, February.
Okay. So people should be thinking about the dark months.
Yeah. Great time to go to an indoor event.
And see what we're doing. Yep. Okay. So let's see. As it gets colder and darker, many of us are trying to maybe head inside, bury ourselves under the covers with a good book, right? Now, I have this question first. As a librarian, are you a voracious reader as well?
Yeah, I mean, I am. It's my stereotype.
My partner, she reads between 80 and 100 books a year.
That's about the pace I'm on usually.
Yeah. And are you on that whole 40 pages a day program or something like that?
No, I'm much more free with it, you know. I'm like, sometimes I'll read 200 pages a day, sometimes I'll read no pages a day. So
I'm lucky if I get, you know, 10 pages in a week, you know. So I mean, I love certain authors, and I do so many other things that I find myself, I'm that person who, when I lay down at night to read, I get about a paragraph in and then
gone.
I'm out. Yeah. So I would love to be doing it like in the morning. I think that's a really good time. Is there any studies on that? Like, is there a best time to be reading to make sure you're absorbing the information?
I don't know if there are, but it's a really good question. I know for me, you know, my thing that I like to do, this is a kind of a weird thing I like, is I read about 5 books at the same time.
Oh, I know people that do that. Yeah.
So if I get bored with one, I'm like, well, I'll just switch up to the other one. And so I feel like that's how I get a lot of reading done, is I kind of let my interests ebb and flow with a certain book.
Gotcha. What's your genre, John?
I really read all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, right now I'm reading nonfiction. You know, it's I have a really fun book that I mean, I don't know if it's fun, but it's a great book.
That's
maybe
right.
Maybe it's a little heavy, but it's a fun, it's a really great read. I'm reading a book by Patrick Radden Keefe. It's called Empire of Pain, and it's about the family, the Sackler family, which is one of the main families responsible for the opioid crisis. They've been they were the family that owned Purdue Pharmaceutical. But really, I read this book because I love that author. He is just a great writer. He's written quite a few wonderful nonfiction books that really explore interesting topics. The last one he wrote was called Say Nothing. It was all about the Troubles in Ireland, which is like a period of kind of political turmoil in Northern Ireland. And so he's just a really
sometimes it's
great storyteller.
It's not even so much the topic, right? It's how they tell it. It's like, I'm that way with movies. Like, I'll watch certain things with an actor in it, no matter what the story, you know, because I want to watch those actors.
Yeah, he's definitely an author I'll pick up just because he wrote it.
Yeah. So any other book recommendations, or is that the hot tip for the month?
I think it's the hot tip for the month, but I mean, there's so many great titles out there at the library. And really, if you are looking for a book and you don't know what to pick up, you can always come in and ask one of our staff. We're great at finding a book for every reader.
That's awesome. And for those that don't know, how easy is it to get a library card?
Super easy. Just bring your ID in, and then we'll sign you up.
Awesome. And is the Juno Library hooked into any of the online library borrowing systems?
Absolutely. So we do have OverDrive, which is you can get to through the Libby app, which if you download the Libby app, you have your library card, it'll give you access to just a multitude of ebooks. We also have a service called Hoopla, which has more ebooks, also some music and movies on it as well. Lots of great electronic offerings that are available with your library card.
That's awesome. So how can we learn more about these events? Is it just hopping on Juno Libraries?
Yeah, you can head to juno.org/library and check out what we have on offer. And then, you know, maybe learn a little bit about some of those electronic services too while you're there.
Awesome. So the Juno Public Library is hosting an event with the Master Gardeners October 25th titled Grew This, Killed That, Lesson Learned, covering successes and failures of this year's gardening season. Also, get yourself to the library, pick up some of this recommended reading, or attend some of these other events. Thank you so much, John, for being here today in the studio with me.
Thanks, Boston.
As a reminder, we are in the middle of KTOO's fall membership drive. KTOO is listener-supported community radio made possible thanks to donors like yourself. Juno Afternoon is locally produced and live, connecting arts, culture, and community to you and your everyday life in Juno. Thank you for sharing part of your life with us and becoming a member today at ktoo.org. And special today, we have the partnership with IGA Super Bear and Foodland to give 2 cans of food to the Glory Hall for every donation. And for every $1,000 raised, a turkey will be donated. Thank you for your support. And that will do it for Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful weekend. Just a reminder, Juno Afternoon is currently on a reduced schedule with shows on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7 and streaming online at ktoo.org. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon where you can listen to episodes or find out more on how to be a guest yourself on the show. Juno Afternoon is produced by the Arts and Culture team here at KTOO. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. I'm Boston Christopher, your host for today, with help from Aaron Tripp and Shelley Delaney. Thank you, and have a glorious Juno evening.